The voice of a gifted spiritual teacher carries authenticity, inspiration, and insight, all of which are transmitted in an instant. My name is Tammy Simon, and this is Voices of Wisdom from Sounds True. In this excerpt from Mindfulness for Beginners, best-selling author and meditation teacher Jon Kabat-Zinn teaches us that by slowing down and learning the universal skill set of mindfulness, we can come to a direct experience of the difference between the process of thinking and the vastness of awareness.
Now, when it comes to thinking, speaking of thinking, which is so dominating in our lives, and as soon as you sit down to meditate or lie down to meditate, the first thing you'll notice, the mind has a life of its own. It's just going to go and go and go. And it's going to have ideas and opinions now about mindfulness, now about meditation, about how well you're doing or not doing, or how boring it is and how awareness of boredom doesn't do what John said it would do. It's just more boredom. Well, think about it for a moment. Isn't it true that ever since we were in school, we've been trained in critical thinking? I mean, I remember very clearly myself asking my teachers when I was something I didn't want to learn, like, say, trigonometry or grammar. I'd say, well, why do we have to learn this? And I was told always that it would help me to develop the capacity to think critically and to speak more clearly and more thoughtfully. And you know what? It turns out that's true. And I actually love grammar, and I love the English language, and I love writing. And while, you know, I don't use trigonometry very much, I love the whole notion of the trigonometry of the universe, so to speak, and the geometry of the universe, and the fact that the geometry of the universe is not Euclidean, and that Einstein actually, you know, proposed, and it seems to be the case, that the universe is warped by gravity. And so it's like, you know, time and space are actually warped by mass. And this is really interesting stuff. So, you know, you do need a foundation in critical thinking in order to be able to understand the world even a tiny bit. So it's extremely valuable, thinking. I mean, of course, I mean, thinking is unbelievably valuable, and it's very important as a beginner in meditation. You understand meditation is not about shutting off your thinking. It's not about shutting down your thinking. It's not saying it would be better if you didn't think and that we're trying to just suppress all thought and have the mind be silent. If you try to suppress your thinking, you're going to wind up with a gigantic headache. It's like trying to stop the ocean from waving. It's in the nature of the surface of the mind to wave, secrete these little thoughts, these bubbles coming off the bottom of a pot of water. I mean, there are many different images to describe them. But if we get caught in them, and if we self-identify with them, that's me, or that's not me, then we're really caught. That's what's called clinging. The Buddha put it this way. He said all his teachings could be condensed into one sentence. Since he taught nonstop, without taking any time off for sabbaticals, vacations, or even weekends, he taught nonstop for 45 years, and not just 9 to 5. And he said, all of my teachings can be encapsulated in one sentence. I like to say, hey, I mean, if that's true, maybe we should memorize the sentence, even if we don't understand it. I mean, imagine you get 45 years of teaching in one sentence. And the sentence is, nothing is to be clung to as I, me, or mine. I won't even bother to say any more about it, but you have to understand what he means by the verb clinging. It doesn't mean there's no you. You have to get somebody, hire somebody, some servant to put on your pants in the morning because there's no you. And, you know, you don't have any money in your bank account because it's not yours and there's no bank. And no. What it means is that the clinging is what's in that is self-identification, the self-centeredness that distorts, that creates illusions that function as prisons for us. So isn't it true that we've gotten so good at thinking that we don't recognize thoughts as thoughts anymore? Isn't it true that we tend to experience our ideas, our opinions, our thoughts as facts? as the absolute reality of things, even when we know, and this is very true, I think you'll recognize it, that someplace deep down, that that's not the case. Of course we do, but we don't know what to do with that uncomfortable feeling lurking in the shadows of our awareness, in part because it's a bit scary, or more than a bit scary. But what we haven't had since early childhood or at any time during our education in general, at least that's certainly true for me, is any kind of advice or systematic training in the value of awareness as something other than and bigger than thought and emotion, something that can hold both thoughts and emotion and which is already not caught by them or caught up in them, as we've been seeing. Awareness, as I've already said, is our birthright as much as our amazing capacities for thinking and feeling, or for that matter, of our eyes for seeing. But when did you ever take a course or even one class in the cultivation of awareness, along with all your training in critical thinking? It's doubtful that you ever have. Amazingly, it's not part of the curriculum in elementary school, which it should be, or middle school or high school, or for that matter, what we call higher education. Although now that's changing rapidly in some circles across the entire educational and age spectrum. It's not that there's anything wrong with thinking. It's one of humanity's most amazing gifts. But when not examined in the larger field of awareness, thinking can run amok. It can also wind up, along with the unexamined tumult of afflictive emotional states, imprisoning us and causing great suffering to ourselves and to others and to the world too. As Aristotle put it somewhat harshly, the unexamined life is not worth living. Since mindfulness is about the cultivation of moment-to-moment awareness through careful and systematic and disciplined paying attention, it can seem at first, especially at the beginning, as if what's most important is what we're paying attention to, that is, the objects of attention. Whether it's what we're seeing or what we're hearing or what we're smelling or tasting or touching or feeling or knowing, in other words, what we're experiencing. That's in part because from the beginning, we do have to focus on something to pay attention to. Whether it's the feeling of the breath moving in and out of our body, or the world of sounds coming to our ears, or anything else we can perceive or apprehend in the present moment. But it's important to know, especially from the beginning, especially if you really are a beginner, it's important to know this from the very beginning, that it's not the breath or the sounds or even our thoughts when we're paying attention to thoughts as if they were weather patterns in the mind, clouds rising and passing away. It's not that that's most important. What's most important and most easily missed or taken for granted is the awareness that feels and knows without thinking that breathing is going on in this moment, that hearing is going on in this moment, that thoughts are moving through the sky of the mind in this moment. It's the awareness that's important in all of this, no matter what the objects are we're paying attention to. And that awareness is already ours. It's already available, already complete, already capable of holding and knowing non-conceptually anything and everything in your experience, inwardly and outwardly. No matter how big, no matter how trivial or how momentous, because that is simply the property of awareness itself, and you already have it. Or perhaps it would be more accurate to say, you already are it.
You've been listening to Voices of Wisdom from Sounds True, sponsored by Bread for the Journey. For more wisdom for the inner life, please visit www.soundstrue.com.